Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Information's 411, your weekly look, podcast, insight from the reporting team at the Information about all the best stories that we wrote this week, or some of the best stories we wrote this week, and the reporters that wrote them, and some other fascinating details. My name is Tom Dotan. I'm one of the reporters at the Information. We've got a pretty full house in the studio. I've got Nick Bastone, Jessica Lesson, to talk about David Drummond, important figure at Google, chief legal counsel. What was his role?
Yeah, chief legal officer, but obviously a lot went into that, but that was the title.
Yeah, okay. And he is going to be stepping down. He's going to be leaving the company, and he's which is a trend of kind of earlier executives at Google, but he is a very interesting character in the mix. And so Nick had a great story that came out today on Friday about his relationship with Google Ventures and the tension that existed there. But he also is someone that we've written a lot about in the past and has an interesting history within the company. So before we get to what Nick wrote about, I want to ask just about, and Jessica, you've written about Google for years. Explain David's role in the company. Yeah. Why is he so important? Why is he someone that, you know, his movements matter?
I love that I get to be the historian.
Yes, the Google historian. Yes. Yeah, you're the Doris Kearns Goodwin.
said no one ever. But, David Drummond, the way I like to think about him was sort of as Larry Page's, business wingman. The Larry and Sergey obviously were the co-founders. You had Eric Schmidt as the CEO for a while. But, David Drummond was one of the earliest employees there and was just very, very closely aligned with Larry Page. And yeah. So I think, obviously his Larry Page's sort of departure, I think it was inevitable that David would move on too. Getting more to answer your question, though, that he wore a lot of hats, right? Mm-hmm. He was the chief legal officer, so for a long time, until fairly recently, the general counsel reported to him. More recently, so in that role, of course, he was very involved in every major business decision at the company, major acquisitions, and really the whole strategy. I think more recent years, when Google spun up various investing arms, most notably Google Ventures, that reported into him. Mm-hmm. So I think that in this
why that seems like a bit of a strange extension of that role.
Yeah, why with Google is a question one must have to ask many times in terms of organizational structure, right? Yeah. It's been a company where. You had sort of Chrome and Android for many years competing head to head with different leaders. I think it was let a thousand flowers bloom. At the end of the day, Larry trusted David very, very much. And Google Ventures, back when it was started, was a strange beast. It wasn't a traditional corporate venture arm, in that it was investing in very specific priorities for the company. Uh-huh. It was really Google was his only investor, but it was given a very broad mandate. So I think
describe themselves as fairly independent too. Every time I've run across the GV people, they would sort of say, "Yeah, we're Google, but we're not quite Google. We're slightly off."
Yeah, and this will get, and I'll just wrap up this, and they can talk about his piece. But so. Overseeing the investment portfolio, which went on to include Capital G, or I don't know if that was renamed again. All these things have been, but many different arms. And I think in recent years, David is spending a lot of time doing that. Then, of course, 2 years ago, we sort of broke the news about an affair he had had with someone who had at the time worked in the legal department, which reported into him. Since then, the woman has come out publicly and sort of attacked him in some ways. And there's really just been a swirl of question and investigation from the Google board about not just him, but also him and sort of his relationships.
And yet, through all those controversies, our reporting and other subsequent reporting, he has survived that in a situation where not others, there are many executives that I would imagine under similar circumstances would not have continued on.
Yeah, and I think, it's important to note that and this goes back 2 weeks ago, but when he said he was stepping aside, Google went out of their way to say he wasn't getting an exit package. So I think that was, the Google of today, run by Sundar, is really trying to put that chapter behind them. We'll see what happens. But yes, he, sort of resigned and is moving on. I think technically, you know, it hasn't been his kind of last day yet. But, to, you know, he's an important, I think he, controversial inside the company, you know, known as a person who, if he doesn't like you, he doesn't like you.
Yeah.
But, you know, is also known as a person who from day one, was really, by Larry Page's side as Google became what, just this week, a $1 trillion market cap company.
Right. So, right. Yeah. I saw Marissa Mayer's tweet. We're all very excited for Google. Storied number. So, speaking of people that he did not get along with, after the announcement that he's stepping down comes out, Bill Maris, who for the longest time, was running GV, pretty blatantly and publicly said, yeah, I did not get along with David.
Yeah.
He and I did not see eye to eye on things, which you don't see people in Silicon Valley doing
that often.
He said
it was the reason he left the company.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a striking, we just, in our business, we don't see, people say a lot of things anonymously, you don't see that publicly.
Yeah, often. There's a lot of glad handing, but this was like pretty specific and you know, it seemed like there was a lot going on there, which is, I guess, what your story was about. So explain to me, you know, how it came to be that Bill Maris and others at Google Ventures had a falling out with David.
Well, I think, you know, what we had heard, been talking to people about, is that there was this tension between Maris and Drummond, and it stemmed from compensation. So early on, you know, in 2009, Google Ventures was started, and it was sort of this idea to legitimize their venture, their investing arm, and they weren't sure how successful it was going to be. Over a few years, though, they start to have some wins. You know, some of their companies, Nest, I think, was their first $1 billion exit, ironically, to
Google.
Funny
how that happens.
But this thing starts taking off, and
Uber obviously has been a big one.
Right.
David Drummond very involved in that.
Right. And they had set the sort of carried interest of what these partners are going to get from their investments, and it was set to what we found out to be 25%.
Which is that typical? What's typical?
It's a little high.
It's a little high.
It's usually typical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And so we just learned that there was some tension there. Like, this became very successful. This carry was set early on, and over time, there was thoughts like, hey, maybe, you know, this was set a little bit too high. So there was tensions there, and we heard that Drummond, as well as Larry Page, thought that, you know, the partners there were getting a little bit too much.
A little too high on the hog over there. I mean, from the people that were on the other side of that, how did they feel about the situation?
I mean, I think it sounds like, you know, carry is one of those things that there's not like a definite industry standard. I think it was on the higher side. But I think the thinking was, you know, we're making Google a lot of money. You know, we sort of are, I don't know, entitled, but we're earning this. Like, we've made this thing a huge success. Like, GV is thought of as not only like a successful corporate fund, but one of the most successful venture funds, like, in the Valley, in the country. So, I think they thought, like, hey, we built this. We, you know, we kind of deserve this.
Right. And David just felt like this was, we could go back to industry standard, or, you know, because it's a corporate fund, there are different rules applying here. I mean, what's the argument?
I don't think we know exactly. I mean, I think what was really interesting about Nick's piece is, you know, a couple things. One, putting sort of this public rivalry, Drummond hasn't responded to Maris, so, you know, we're putting Maris is sort of agitating in some context. And I think it's fascinating because, as Nick said, you know, this is a firm that defied a lot of odds, right? I mean, like, people, I think I was covering Google around the launch of it, and it was just, it was met with a lot of skepticism.
Why?
Because corporate venture capital was just seen as a second-class citizen to the Sequoias and Kleiner Perkins of the world. And in part because it was thought entrepreneurs wouldn't want the capital because they would have too many strings attached in terms of doing business with the parent company. And so, I think a lot of people sort of contributed to that. But at the same time, you know, you can make the argument that the Google brand was a huge factor in their success. So it was a really interesting question, and you can see how you could really get into it. And there's a lot of gray area there. you know, separately, I think we're in this incredibly interesting time in private technology investing right now, where a lot of the one-time high flyers haven't been able to sustain that success for a really long time. We've seen this with our reporting around Andreessen Horowitz and Kleiner Perkins and many others. And so, you know, Nick, as you point out in your piece, Google took a charge on some of its private technology investments recently. And again, we don't know the overall performance of Google Ventures, but if a company's taking a charge on their private investments of some nature, so there are questions around their performance. And also, the industry is really grappling with issues like diversity. And you had some stuff about that in your piece, too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why we were interested in looking at it in the first place is they, in the third quarter of last year, they announced this $1.5 billion loss. And it just drew attention to their investing arms. Like, these are becoming bigger and bigger funds, and the risk is becoming higher and higher. So like Jessica said, we don't know the exact performance, but you know, we'll see over time like how these perform. And then to the diversity point, you know, we learned that there was, you know, this presentation that was given early in 2017 by then like a marketing partner on their team, entitled Houston, in reference to Houston, we have a problem. And, you know, GV is not alone, obviously, here in not, you know, having a high number of female investing partners or, you know, investing in companies led by underrepresented groups. But this presentation really highlighted this for GV. And, you know, they say that they're taking action. They have OKRs, which are sort of these internal goal setting framework that Google uses. And they say, like, you know, hiring more female partners and investing in more underrepresented groups is like a huge priority for them. So
it is interesting that by the time you have a partner in your team, sort of, that seemed like a little bit of a call to arms, right? When internally facing a lot of pressure. So that I think that was new reporting that shows the extent to which even their own people have been frustrated by it.
Right.
What about David's role in all of that? I mean, where did he stand when it comes to pushing these initiatives? I mean, he is Black, which is, you know, there aren't that many in venture capital or, frankly, you know, in top executive positions in Silicon Valley. I mean, what was his stance in all of that?
That's not something that I learned.
Yeah.
And I think in general, the vibe, I mean, it's like all these senior executives who have been at Google for a gazillion years, you know, I think they're involved in some things and not involved in others, right?
Yeah.
And so also, if you look at an executive like Drummond, who had a big portfolio, you know, I think it just depended, you know, there's a sense of around some people at the time that he wasn't, you know, always there or involved. Now, there are other examples of when he was, but I think, you know, it's... something else I really thought was great about Nick's story when I was reading it is this point that other people like Google Ventures sometimes saw him described in bios as the chairman of Google Ventures. And and this was just like if he was speaking at an event and had an official bio. And that they kind of bristled at that, too. And again, you know, maybe someone just threw that in. Who knows? But like that, I think, it's a window into some of the turf wars that you see at these large companies, and especially a place like Google, where you've ridden just an incredible business to the point where you've got very sort of dispersed group of people and business and executives and leaders, and I think it's fairly amazing that some of this infighting doesn't break through to the surface more often, to be honest.
Yeah, but when it does, it always seems to be pretty major. Right. So what does it really mean for, let's start with GV, with David at some point being gone.
Right. You know, people that we spoke to said they don't expect like a huge impact on like the day-to-day operations. I think where he came in was, you know, his sort of how they described him as an advisor, and it was described to us for like legal and ethical considerations. I think where it came up for him was where you know, GV and Google, like there could be overlap in some things they were looking at, whether it's investments or Google looking to acquire a company. The fact that GV was trying to operate independently, theoretically, they shouldn't know what is going on at Google, like if they were going to acquire a company. Right. So he was sort of this like go-between person. I think he had other, you know, functions within the company. But that's to say that it might not come up that often. I think Alphabet has acquired like 8 companies that one of their investing arms has invested in all time. So, I mean, there's like I said, there's other things that he was involved in, but I don't think they're going to have someone fill in that role. I don't know if it'll be on the Alphabet team, but I don't think on the day to day it's going to, like, you know, they're not going to notice a ton. It'll probably need to be filled from like a regulatory standpoint, but not like a huge operating role day to day.
Gotcha. And then for Google and Alphabet writ large, what does it mean to have David gone? I mean, obviously, the context here is there's been a huge amount of turnover or departures, exoduses from the top leadership team from early days. So, I mean, is it just a cultural thing? Are there business implications? I mean, what can we?
I think it underscores the sort of the challenge Sundar's going to have too. Is he kind of officially, I mean, he's been CEO of Google, now he's going to be CEO of Alphabet. And I think the question for him is, what is he going to focus on and what is he not going to focus on? And is he somewhat going to rationalize, you know, the sprawling Alphabet that has major bets in everything from, you know, internet delivered via balloons to obviously autonomous vehicles, to search, to YouTube, to et cetera, and how is he going to do that where the regulatory scrutiny is going to be unprecedented? And so I think, you know, I don't think Google Ventures or the investing arm is going to be on the chopping blocks. Like they're established. But overall, I think Sundar and specifically CFO Ruth Porat as well are kind of going to be streamliners. And things are allowed to flourish and bloom under a founder like Larry Page that just don't kind of pass muster in a different era. You know, I spent some time this week with Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, and talking about the transition from Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer and the two sort of coming in as not one of those kinds of founders. He was very upfront about how you do things differently and you build your team differently and all of that. And so Sundar's been doing that, you know, but I think with Larry and Sergey saying, okay, you know, yes, we still have economics in Google, so you can question how far they're going to be or not be, right? They still own so much of it. But I think you're going to see some focus, some discipline. I think there's a reason when the announcement of Larry Page stepping aside happened, you know, the stock went up a little, like investors were happy.
Like a little bit of the kind of kookiness that Google had always been known for. And a lot of that seems to be very Larry. I mean, I can remember whatever, the barge out in San Francisco Bay.
It's not so, I mean, I think the thing is like the expensive kookiness, right?
Yeah, so, right, yeah, the barge, that's, you know, that's pocket change.
I think that's what people have questions around. And again, you know, when the core business is growing strong, you know, quickly, people forget about these things, but everything is kind of maturing. So on the investing side, you know, is it possible? I think Google has an AI investment arm as well called Gradient that you can look up online miraculously. You know, so I just don't think in a Sundar world you're going to see a proliferation in those. And over time, I think you maybe see fewer. But for Google Ventures, you know, I think the bigger challenge now is just how do you stay competitive in a world where capital is flowing in, and there are some great companies, but there's not an unlimited number.
Who next do you think to look at in terms of those who were among the earliest at the company that are still there? The one that comes to mind is Susan Wojcicki over at YouTube, which is a different situation. They're dealing with all other kinds of controversies and issues, but is there anyone else you think might be worth paying attention to? We're not predicting or reporting, but just as observers of the company, other top executives that have been there for a while. That
there are a couple of very senior people on the engineering side who you could sort of see move on over time. I don't think Susan's going anywhere right now. She seems very devoted to helping sort of YouTube through these challenges. I think a departure by her would be a major deal for those reasons. But I think she's she's there. And you know, I wonder, like, you obviously Google is facing so much pressure from employees right now to activism on all fronts to sort of change and evolve. I was actually surprised when I was talking to someone who works there the day Larry stepped aside, and they were a bit nostalgic and sad, you know, and so I was a little bit surprised by that. I'd sort of been paying more attention to the voices inside of Google who wanted to really turn over a new chapter. So I think that's another theme too, in how you kind of, in many ways, the Google-y culture is at the root of a lot of Google's problems right now, the radical transparency and all of that. But
yeah.
But yet, you know, for so many people, it's the reason they're there. I don't envy Sundar for the next long period of time. It's a tall order.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I envy Nick for getting to cover the company during this crazy time, because
exactly.
It's there's a lot going on, and I imagine we'll have you on here a lot to talk about it. All right. Nick, Jessica, thank you for joining.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks.